Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back. So we're going to look ahead to the conference finals over in the Western Conference. As you might expect, Golden State Warriors will feature. They're up against Portland Trail Blazers. And then in the Eastern Conference, no LeBron, of course, we have Milwaukee Bucks against Toronto Raptors. We're joined by Ryan Farmer-Jones, former editor at Slam Magazine. Ryan, we'll start with the Eastern Conference final. I guess one of the main reasons the Milwaukee Bucks are here is courtesy of the most dramatic of finishes against the Philadelphia 76ers, Kawhi Leonard, scoring here with, he shot the ball. It was in mid-flight when the buzzer went, and then, as you'll hear, it hits the rim of the basket four or five times as well on the way in.
You gotta be aware of the inbounder here if you're Philly.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
So, I mean, hitting the rim of the basket four times before going in, that's approaching record territory, or is it?
Yeah, you don't see that often. It's funny, just listening to the call again there as you played it, the delay with the announcers where, you know, the shot goes up, and then there's a pause, and you wait, what's happening? And it, I mean, obviously, I was watching it the other night, and it was incredible to see. And, you know, the only reason that you usually, if a ball hits a rim like that, it's not going to sort of bounce straight up. It'll usually bounce off at an angle. But Leonard had to shoot it with such a high arc because Joel Embiid was coming out to try to block it, and he's 7 feet tall. So he had to shoot it almost, you know, with as little arc as, or as much arc as he could. And that, and because it came almost straight down, was the only reason it had a chance to bounce back up and straight down the way it did. So, yeah, just an unbelievable finish to a great game and a great series.
So, Milwaukee against Toronto, how does this shape up then, Ryan?
You know, it's a really interesting test. The whole thing with the Eastern Conference this year, obviously, has been the absence of LeBron James, you know, out west and actually not in the playoffs with the Lakers. And so it was for the first time in 8 years, 9 years now, the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, spot almost doesn't feel sort of predetermined as it often did with LeBron. You know, Milwaukee had the best record in the league this year. They've got the probable MVP in Giannis Antetokounmpo, and he's just been phenomenal, and they've got a really nice roster around him. They haven't really been tested these first two rounds of the playoffs. They've had a few days off now to sort of rest and be ready for this matchup. Toronto, with Kawhi Leonard, he's playing as well as anyone in the league right now. They've had some close calls the past couple of years, but couldn't get past LeBron. So he's out of the way now. So I think it's got the potential to be a really good series. You've basically got two of the top, you know, five guys in the league, in Leonard and Giannis. And so I think it should be a great matchup. Milwaukee's got to have the advantage, I think, but Toronto's probably got a little more experience across the roster. So I think it's going to be a hell of a series.
Toronto, I'm right in saying, are the only Canadian side in the NBA, founded about 1990s territory, 1995.
Mid-90s. There was a franchise in Vancouver as well, the Grizzlies, who didn't last all that long there and have since relocated to Memphis. So, they're the only Canadian franchise represented best probably by Drake, the multi-platinum rapper, is kind of their mascot and courtside, either good or bad luck charm, depending on if you look at the record. And he actually wasn't there the other night, which was funny that they won dramatically without Drake in attendance. But yeah, the only Canadian franchise, and you know, have got a really royal, loyal, rabid fan base up in Toronto and throughout much of Canada.
I hear Drake basically has the run of the place. He comes on the court when he feels like it.
Yeah, it can be a bit much. I think if you're not a really big Drake fan or a really big Raptors fan, I think it tends to be a bit annoying. But he's just, his celebrity is so massive that I guess he can get away with it.
Yeah. So you mentioned Giannis. I'm not going to try and pronounce his second name just yet, if that's
okay. It's tough, yeah.
Yeah. Giannis for the Bucks as a potential MVP this year. He's 24 years of age, born in Athens. The Greek Freak is his nickname.
Yeah.
Nigerian parents. So what's his backstory?
Well, I mean, that's really it. You know, there was a time, I think, briefly when he was growing up where his, you know, they sort of had to beg for, you know, for spare change on the streets. I mean, he definitely grew up in poverty and, you know, they were able to sort of get it figured out and get a little stability. And he was this, you know, always sort of young, long, athletic kid, but he sprouted and just, you know, maintained this sort of ridiculous skill set as he grew and obviously caught the eye of scouts and just kept growing. And so, you know, he's been in the league, 4 or 5 years now. And the combination of his length and athleticism and his skill set, his ball handling ability, increasingly his shooting ability, just his speed, his explosiveness. You know, he sort of dunks from places that guys didn't think you could dunk until pretty recently. Sort of somewhat similar, I don't want to maybe overstate it, but in the way that, you know, Steph Curry and other guys now have sort of revolutionized the distance for shooting, what sort of is an acceptable shot. You know, guys are shooting fairly regularly from 30 feet or more now. You know, Giannis kind of has done that for the dunk, where he ends up in positions where you think he's going to have to shoot a 10-foot jump shot or try for a layup, and he ends up dunking the ball. So it's been incredible to watch him. You know, he's still a work in progress is a really terrifying thing there. I think that he still can probably get a lot better. He can improve his shooting still. You know, he still is a little impatient offensively sometimes and has a tendency to maybe sort of run guys over or to take an ill-advised three-point shot. But there's room for him still to improve, and like I said, he's most likely going to be the MVP this year. He's phenomenal talent.
Right. James Harden seems to be his stiffest competition in that regard.
Yeah, I think this year, and I think, you know, the votes are in. It's always funny because the votes are done before the playoff starts. You know, so if Harden won it now after a somewhat disappointing, second-round exit to the Warriors, and again, he didn't when it was sort of mattered the most. He didn't play his best basketball. So if Harden were to win now on a vote that was made a month ago, it would be pretty disappointing. I think Giannis had the momentum going into the regular season. His team having the best record certainly helped. And I think, you know, with you never know how this measures with voters on that sort of thing, but I think some folks were a little tired of Harden. You know, his style of play doesn't necessarily endear itself to everyone. He tends to be looking to draw fouls as often as he's trying to actually score. Doesn't always play a lot of defense. So I think Giannis, it just felt like his year, and I think that'll be the outcome in a few weeks here.
Yeah, okay. So, well, I guess you sort of answered my next question. Bucks have beaten the Raptors 3-1 in the regular season. You're expecting them to make it through?
Milwaukee, yeah, I do. I think that they've got the advantage again of being a bit more well rested, having the home court advantage. I think they make sense to make the finals this year. Again, Toronto with Leonard playing as well as he is are going to be a tough out, but I think you've got to favor the Bucks at this point. And again, not only Giannis, and they've got some really good players around him. Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton, but another key guy for them, Malcolm Brogdon, who's been hurt for a while, is coming back now. And if he's able to contribute, he's a very efficient scorer, and he gives them just that much more depth and balance to put around, again, maybe the best all-around player in the league, or certainly one of them right now in Giannis.
Over in the Western Conference Final, we have Golden State Warriors. Naturally, they're against Portland Trail Blazers. Warriors have won 2 in the regular season. Trailblazers have won 2. Geez, the Curry family are making everybody feel a bit inadequate, aren't they?
Yeah, they have a way of doing that. Obviously everyone knows Steph, and then his brother Seth Curry plays on Portland as not one of their stars, but a pretty a guy who can contribute definitely off the bench as a guard, and not, again, certainly not as good of his brother, but a solid NBA player. But yeah, it's got the potential to be a good series, but it's also got the potential to sort of just be a step for the Warriors en route, you know, to another title, or certainly at least another finals berth. I think there's a hope that the Blazers, can really make a series of it just for entertainment's sake, for the sake of the quality of the game. You know, they're really their backcourt with Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum. Is a wonderful backcourt in Portland. They're two great players, very exciting. But top to bottom, you know, they've been sort of a similar team to Golden State in some ways as far as being led by that dynamic backcourt, but just not as good. And certainly they also don't have a Kevin Durant. Whether the Warriors will have a Kevin Durant in this series remains to be seen. He got injured against the Rockets near the tail end of that last series. So, you know, Steph Curry is sort of back in the spotlight for the Warriors, as he had been, obviously, early in their run. But he's had to take a bit of that backseat to Durant in the past few years. So it'll be fascinating to see how that all plays out. It might look a bit like the Warriors team, you know, that won 73 games 3 years ago before Durant arrived, where it really rotated around Curry and that supporting cast. So, it's got the potential to be very compelling and hopefully not too lopsided.
Yeah, okay. I saw Steve Kerr. Well, I saw him on two occasions. One, he was summoning the kind of power, the spirit of Jurgen Klopp, and talking about his boys being effing giants as well, and forewarned everyone who was going to curse. And also I saw him just on the Currys talking about how the parents, Dell and Sonia Curry, are kind of having the time of their lives. You know, he's talking to them. They're traveling the country. They're seeing their sons play. It's an amazing thing. Is there a, you know, Gladwellian theory as to why both Currys have made it so far in basketball? Is there anything that Dell was doing with them at the back garden?
Well, so, I mean, you know, Dell, of course, was a very good NBA player, one of the better shooters in the league when he played. I think Sonia, their mother, was, a college volleyball player, so a very good athlete. So the genetics on both sides of the family tree there from the parents were obviously pretty strong. You know, it's such a fluke. You see guys at that level, you know, Michael Jordan had two sons, and neither of them made it past, you know, sort of middling college careers. Mm. So there's no guarantee of that sort of thing obviously turning out. But, you know, yeah, Curry, Steph, obviously, in particular, you know, there's sort of something magical about him, like there are, I think, you know, with all elite athletes who've got that ability to sort of just pull magic out of the sky sometimes. Seth hasn't quite shown that, but again, a very good, serviceable NBA player. And then, yeah, to have the parents not only have produced these kids, but to be in a position where they can sort of travel and watch their games all the time, and they're always very easy to spot in the stands. So, yeah, it's sort of the first family of the NBA. It very much feels that way.
Yeah. And what's the Warriors' form generally? Obviously, look, statistically, they're winning most of their games. They've topped the Western Conference. But to the eye, are you in comparison with the previous two campaigns, are we impressed?
You know, it's been interesting this year. You know, they weren't as dominant, certainly, as they had been a couple years ago. They've already lost four games in the first two rounds of the playoffs, which is a bit surprising, but not necessarily a shock. Some of it comes down to just that sense of, you know, you see this across any sport. How long can a great elite team maintain itself at that highest level, right? You know, and so the nature of the playoffs, obviously, in American basketball in particular, you've got, you know, this 7-month season, but then you've got these 2 months at the end where no matter how good you were early on, as long as you're playing well in the playoffs, it doesn't matter if you had the best record or the third or fifth best record. And so the Warriors, again, not that they were bad this year, but they've shown the ability certainly to kind of turn it up a bit. And again, even with Kevin Durant out, who Kevin Durant arguably, you know, right there with LeBron and Kawhi Leonard and Giannis, is maybe the best all-around player in the entire league. Even with him out, you really sort of don't pick against the Warriors to win a title again, just because that core that he joined 3 years ago, somewhat controversially, is still so good. It's still the core that won 73 games. So, they've had lots of moments where they haven't looked great, and there is a question, I think, of how long can you sort of sustain it as a group at that high level when maybe you're not as hungry as you were a few years earlier. But man, when they're rolling, they really still look like the best team in the league. And I think we may see more than a few glimpses of that over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, interesting couple of weeks ahead. I think a lot of people over here will be watching because it's all on Sky Sports, which would be in a bigger majority of houses than where the games would have been previously on. How will we remember the regular season? Has it been good?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. Again, LeBron's move to L.A. dominated a lot of the offseason discussion, and that was largely kind of a dud. He had some injuries, and the team's a bit of a mess, and the team continues to be a mess now in the offseason. You know, so there was the Anthony Davis, who, again, a top-five player when he's healthy, you know, was going to live in New Orleans and hasn't yet, but probably still will, and where he lands will really impact things. The draft lottery is tonight, and so the draft will be coming up in next month, and that'll determine some fortunes with a guy like Zion Williamson. I don't know how much you've heard of him in Ireland, but the college player of the year from Duke, who's just a phenomenal athlete and prospect. So as ever with the NBA, there's sort of what's happening now, and then there's all this what it means, you know, for what's coming next. So I think the offseason will be interesting. Hopefully the next couple rounds of the playoffs will be interesting. The regular season itself, I think we'll probably remember it most for Giannis and his emergence as a true superstar. And then again, a lot of setting the table for what might happen this summer and next year.
Okay. What was his name in Duke again, the superstar?
Zion Williamson. He's actually on the cover of the new Slam magazine. Yeah. He's built sort of like, I mean, I can't even think of a physical comparison. He's about 6'8", and he's basically built like a football linebacker. He's just a gigantic, freakish natural athlete, but his actual skill level is much more sort of subtle and complete than you would expect of a guy who's that natural an athlete. And if he's healthy, you know, he seems sort of impossible to stop. So whoever gets him in the draft will have added a potential franchise player right off the bat, and also one of the most dynamic dunkers and just, you know, sort of exciting all-around players we've seen maybe since LeBron. So for huge impact there.
Yeah, I had heard about him. I'd heard about him as the greatest college player in history, which seemed like a hell of a billing.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, again, like all the elite guys now who come to college, they only stay for 1 year because they don't have to stay any longer. They can go to the NBA after that. And so he'll only have had a one-year career where he didn't even, you know, reach the NBA or the NCAA title game. So in that sense, it's kind of tough to put him, you know, next to a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or some of these guys who played 3 and 4 years and won multiple championships. But certainly his impact while he played this year was incredible, incredible to watch. He, you know, had people who don't normally pay a lot of attention to college basketball paying attention this year. He's just kind of one of those guys who's that compelling in how he plays and the impact he has on the floor. So, yeah, he's got the potential to be an absolutely great NBA player.
Okay. Well, great to have you with us as ever. Thanks so much, Ryan Farmer-Jones.
Always, Sean. Thank you.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.